ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you after a trip to Belgium that saw Norwich City ramp up their championship preparations. We didn't have time whilst in Brussels over the last few days, which got a little bit hectic and doing things on different channels, to fully sit down and record a podcast. So we're doing a full debrief the morning after we've returned to Norwich. I'm your host, Connor Southall, joined by Adam Harvey and Paddy Davitt to reflect on the last week or so we spent overseas following Johannes Hof Torup's Canaries. Paddy, let's start with you. I mean, before we delve into all the nitty-gritty stuff in terms of maybe the football stuff, as a tour, as a week or so, how did you find Belgium and our trip over there?
What do we want? All the colour. My mind immediately goes to, I don't know how much of this story we want to tell, but a certain street in the environs of Liège Stadium. That was quite a discovery. Not one we were planning on walking past. But I think if I just say think of Amsterdam and what springs to mind, then you'll probably know what I'm getting at. So that's what greeted us on our walk back, our 30 minutes in about 32 degrees.
Yeah, it was warm, but it wasn't quite that warm.
No, it got a lot warmer. Yeah, but thankfully we could actually see the state, the rather lovely architecturally. If you've never been, definitely go to Liège just to see the concourse there of their main train station. But that wasn't an area we were planning to see of Liège. But overall, I mean, footballing wise, I thought it was those two friendlies from a competitive point of view from Johannes Thorup. Looking to discover a little bit more about what players he's got to work with. I think he'll have took a lot away from that. The younger players, and we'll get into the weeds of who maybe put their hands up in terms of playing a bigger role as this rest of this pre-season and then obviously into Oxford continues. But also, you know, the Liège weekend, we saw some of the senior players back for the first time, and that feeling allied to, I mean, we're recording this Monday morning, Josh Sargent and Jose Cordoba are due to link back up again today at some point at Colney. And I think that allied to my sense was that this is starting to get serious now, that, you know, you've had those initial weeks of getting to know you and working on fitness and getting to a level where, you know, it's about maybe more about minutes on the pitch for players and sharing those out. Now it does feel Magdeburg, obviously Friday coming and then out in Austria again, that the countdown's underway properly, that all the main players, yes, we know there's one or two injury and fitness concerns in the camp, but all the ammunition at his disposal as this stands, you know, subject to whatever happens in the window or not, is now here. It's in the building. And let's see what it looks like as we move forward. So in that regard, I thought Belgium was a bit of a sea change from, you know, maybe the early part of pre-season. It now feels we're firmly into it, that there's a rhythm to it. You know, players are maybe understanding more and more what Thorup and Glenn Riddershome want from them. You're starting to see patterns of play. Of course, there was lots of elements of those two games I'm sure he wouldn't have been impressed with. He looked a bit of a frustrated figure at times at Liège on the touchline. Bruges, obviously, the start there wasn't what they wanted to, down inside 9 minutes to the champions of Belgium, and that could have gone quite messy. But credit to them, they did come back into that game. So I guess at this stage, it's never going to be this is now working seamlessly and everything is in place, because that isn't the case by any stretch. But you can start to, for me anyway, sketch out a broad outline of, okay, I can see which players he's maybe liking the look of, and with a view to Oxford, which players might be in his plans for that game. And you would hope that as we move forward now, we'll see a bit more of that. So, yeah, footballing wise, yeah, good. And in terms of our logistics, yeah, it was very easy to get out to and get around. Adam is a bit of a demon in terms of, you know, making sure we catch the right trams and buses and whatever else. Hat tip before I forget, though, to the I've talked about Liège, but the bus driver at Liège train station, who basically didn't charge us a penny to get us from there to, well, it was only about a 10-15 minute journey. Obviously, we had to walk back. Pity wasn't about after the game, but certainly prior to the game, in very hot temperatures Saturday afternoon, maybe you took pity on us, but that was good. Yeah, anytime you get a freebie, you've got to grab it. And Bruges, lovely city as well. So, yeah, I mean, if you were sort of asking me about football, I've gone off on a bit of a tangent there, Connor. But overall, I thought it was, in terms of far more importantly, and what he was wanting out of it and what we got out of it, I thought it was a very worthwhile trip. I'll bowl that one back. What did you boys make of it all?
Yeah, I was going to come to Adam on it, because he's obviously a lot more well-travelled than definitely me, but maybe even you, Pad, as well, in terms of culturally and the countries that he's seen. So,
what are you trying to say about my lack of cultural, I don't know, awareness?
How did you find it, Adam, as a country? Where does it rank for you amongst all of the places that you've seen?
Yeah, I was actually not pleasantly surprised. I've sort of heard maybe mixed reviews of Brussels prior to us going, but I think, you know, we all quite enjoyed the city. It was quite a sort of relaxed capital city in terms of the vibe, and everywhere you went, you know, people on the streets having a good time, you know, having good food, good drink, and just kind of the vibe around the place. I thought, you know, people weren't on top of you. You know, you could sort of maneuver around the city without kind of feeling crowded, and that for me was, you know, a real sort of positive, and maybe somewhere that I'd like to revisit at another point. I had been to Bruges before, but I think when I went last time, it was grey skies and pretty miserable. So to see it kind of in a sunny environment, was, you know, I enjoyed that. Liège, I mean, we didn't really get into the sort of city centre, but the outskirts maybe didn't leave much to be desired. Maybe not got kind of that inner feeling that I want to return there too soon. But in terms of that aspect, yeah, all really positive. I think maybe in terms of our first arrival into Brussels and picking up route into our apartment, you know, me and you getting stuck in a lift was probably not the ideal start and preparation, and I think probably scarred us for the rest of the week, those lifts. So maybe, you know, pleasantly pleased to be leaving that behind. But yeah, in terms of the actual trip, I felt, yeah, for us personally, it was a good time. And also, you know, for Norwich, as Paddy sort of outlined, it was a sort of another week further on in their pre-season. You know, it gave Torup a good chance to sort of embed what he wants to do in terms of philosophy and his ideas. And I think the players, you know, they all speak about kind of being around each other 24/7 and how good that can be for sort of team building and bonding. Obviously, there's not sort of any of the new players in the building, which maybe is a little bit of disappointment, but hopefully as we get further on into this week and Austria, there'll be a few more additions maybe that could be around that group, you know, for when they make that trip.
I'd actually forgotten about getting stuck in the lift in terms of the ordering of this podcast, but that was a recurring theme. I think that happened on a few occasions. There were two of them and both of them were pretty unreliable. I actually saw one person had to be released from it. So that gives you an indication of just how secure or not those were. And I mean, gents, the other thing I wanted to ask you about was the diplomatic incident that you caused in Bruges. I wasn't actually in the room, so I was doing my verdict at the time. I don't know which one of you guys want to avail the story, but it didn't do great for UK Belgium relations, did it? Maybe Paddy is best to throw it over to you or whoever wants to take it.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it was Adam who caused the incident. I basically had to deal with the fallout. But to paint the scene, we post-match, let me get me bearings. Was it the Tuesday or the Wednesday they played Bruges? Anyway, irrespective. At a ground, Rosslare, about 30 minutes south of Bruges. Did we ascertain it was the Reading owner used to own it? And
yes.
And for whatever reason, it's almost like a white elephant now. It's a lovely stadium for you know, a lower level team, but actually no team have been playing there. But apparently Neil Adams had a chat with about that on the night, and he was saying that Bruges have bought that facility and they use it for their second team basically. So anyway, the bottom line was that in the press room, not the where you go in the stand, but there's a little anteroom. Well, most grounds we go to, but that was the case at this stadium. There was a nice chiller with cool drinks, which was much needed on that evening. And included were some bottles of a very well-known Belgian beer, which you certainly don't get in any UK press rooms. I'll put that one out there. Although people reading our content or digesting it maybe think sometimes it is influenced by alcohol. That isn't the case. But in certainly, in my experience, Tori, you do tend to get at some of the Belgian and German football stadiums and their media facilities. There's a, if you like, a drink of beer now and again. And of course, you know, what I would say is that we had about 10 or 15 minutes after the game to catch a bus outside the stadium to get back to Bruges, then get another train back to our base in Brussels. So, you know, it was pretty urgent, our exit strategy from the stadium. And we, that's the royal we, but not me, but some other individual on this podcast, basically went to the fridge, two bottles in his bag, and headed out, which we were obviously going to, you know, consume on the way back to our Brussels base. And I wasn't aware that that had taken place. I then walked in subsequently into the room and had the same idea and went to the fridge. And at the moment I retrieved two further bottles, one of the Bruges officials was very unhappy, and then it all became clear that maybe one of us had already had the same idea. And I tried to do my best to calm him down, but there was a lot of raised voices for probably about 2 or 3 minutes, but only in the sense that I was trying to map out. Of course, I mean, if we'd have been, you know, not under time pressure, we'd have stayed there for however long we were going to stay there for, certainly considerably longer than we were able to, and we would have just so. From my point of view, all we were doing really is getting the drinks that we would have drank in the press room there and drinking them on route back to Brussels. But he wasn't really sharing that version of events and felt we'd somehow almost offended him and Bruges and their hospitality. To be fair, though, he was backtracking by the time I'd managed to make my point. And there was, aside from the drink, there was also laid on quite a large, I don't know how many media they thought they were expecting, but there must have been upwards of about 50 of these rolls laid out on plates. And by the end of our dialogue, shall we say, he was very keen to foist these rolls on to me to take on the journey. So I politely declined, put the two beers back, took a bottle of water and checked that was okay with him. I mean, it got a bit farcical at one point where him and another individual were basically saying that their issue was that they get 20 or 40 cents on each empty. I mean, I'm maybe showing my age, but that used to be a thing in this country where your glass bottles, you could take them back and you'd get money back. And and that was really what I think what was offending them as much as us taking the bottles, that they'd lose the 40 cents per empty for handing them back. So anyway, yeah, it wasn't a good episode. And we apologise if he ever happens to be crossing paths with us again, but all rather unnecessary, I thought. I mean, as I say, the only reason we were taking those was because we had, and it was literal. I mean, you had to do a shortened video verdict, Connor. We had to cut a few corners post-match, what we'd normally do, in contrast to Saturday at Liège, where we could sit there for much longer and turn around elements that we need to do, or we like to do immediately after the game. That wasn't an option that night. You know, it's we don't get that bus, then we get a later train. We then get another later connecting train. And I think, as it turned out, it paid off because we got back to Brussels probably an hour quicker than we were originally planning, which, you know, when it's 11:30 at night instead of 12:30 at night, then it does make a difference. But, yeah, no, I couldn't believe it. I know I had my back to him as I was facing the fridge, and he'd obviously clocked me and was off the back of Adam, having already taken them, he was just ready to blow. Adam, of course, but you know, he Teflon man, he'd already walked out the door and didn't get any of this. So I had to take a major hit there. But so yeah, that was, I don't know how informative or enlightening that 10-minute segment was, but you brought it up, Connor. So yeah, just to make it clear, we don't abuse hospitality in these outposts. We're we're representing our organisation and us as individuals, and more widely, some people who are connected to Norwich, albeit a bit more tenuously than we work for the club. But that was a bit unnecessary. But I don't know, maybe he hadn't got the imagery. I think he was their photographer, actually. I think he was their official photographer. So maybe not got a good set of pics that night, and he was a bit grumpy anyway, and we just added to that. But what I'd like to hope that no time in the near future we have to go back to Bruges or we meet them in any European competition, because I get the sense that if he sees us walking through the door, there'll be a padlock on that fridge.
Well, that was going to be my next point, because by the time we got to Liège, Adam, I don't know if those clubs have spoken to each other. Yeah, exactly. I don't know if there'd been any conversations that had taken place, but that fridge was closed and there was definitely no entry to that. So, you kicked off the diplomatic incident. So, did you just run away and let Paddy deal with it, basically?
Well, I think that club photographer semi felt bad for me anyway, because pre-match I had an absolute farce trying to get onto the pitch, because they said, you know, you need a vest to be able to enter the pitch as a club photographer, or, you know, just a sort of external photographer. I was like, whereabouts do I collect those? And I was sent around the houses, to be honest, to the point I might as well have walked back to Brussels and probably gone and bought one. But yeah, this club photographer, he sort of took me under his wing almost and was like, yeah, I'll go and find you one. And between him and Norwich's official photographer, they managed to source me one. And I think probably with that scenario, and maybe sensing my frustration pre-match, maybe he felt bad for me and allowed me to walk out with two. But yeah, maybe less so. I suppose his involvement with Paddy didn't maybe have that personal relationship, and he decided to take it upon himself to vent his frustration. But I did kindly pass on one of mine to Paddy. So yeah, we still had one each.
Yes, yeah, you did. And I will say as well, you guys are, you know, uber professionals. You didn't engage until any of that until after the game and whatnot. So there we go. But yeah, by and large, Belgium was very nice, very nice people, very welcoming people, particularly in Brussels and all the places that we went. So yeah, that was I just thought, you know, a bit of colour to add to it. Let's talk about some actual football then, which is the reason that we are doing this podcast and two games. So I think we'll probably split these maybe between the two. Adam, I'll be honest, I don't know how much of it you were able to watch from like an analytical perspective, because obviously you were at the side of the pitch taking photos, and that's a very different perspective from what we guys get. So if you can't answer it or don't really know, then it's fine. But let's start with you, Adam, and start with Bruges, because that is a contest as a game. And again, context has to be applied to these games, because both Bruges and Standard Liège were at different stages of their pre-season to Norwich. They have now finished their pre-season, by all accounts. Bruges were actually playing, so they played Norwich on the Wednesday, didn't they? And then by Saturday, they were playing in the Super Cup, which they lost. Christoph Schollis scored in that game. So that gives you an indication of where the team's at. And Standard Liège, now Norwich was their last pre-season friendly ahead of their season starting against Genk next Sunday. So these were always going to be quite high-level games against teams who are in a different place. That Bruges game probably felt like a team that was just way ahead of them on ability, on fitness, on sharpness, compared to where they were heading into that contest in Rosselaer on Wednesday, Adam.
Yeah, of course, they had their cup final on Saturday, and you could sort of see that they were a settled side, and maybe they were sort of looking at individuals for that game on Sunday, where Norwich, you know, it was very much kind of a mixed 11 still, a team that had only played one friendly prior to that at Northampton. And, you know, you look at Adam Eder, first minutes for him, only was on the pitch for 30 minutes, and then it's just those constant changes. And I think Norwich didn't really ever get into a rhythm, and maybe it was only kind of in those latter stages of sort of that game, maybe the second half, where you sort of maybe started to see them play around a little bit more, and maybe those systems that Torup are trying to sort of embed were starting to show. But he sort of spoke post-match about kind of the defensive work was something they hadn't really got round to yet, and you kind of got that sense maybe on Saturday in Liège that they had worked on that and there was lots of improvements in those areas. So I wasn't really too bothered, I don't think, about kind of the result or maybe the performance levels those days. It was just about trying to get minutes into these players' legs against, you know, a top-end team, a side that won the division last year. You know, they made the semi-finals of the Conference League, you know, a really good outfit. And, you know, the likes of Jolis obviously trying to prove a point as well against Norwich. You know, I think there was probably lots of context to wrap around that. And it was still another warm evening. So I think all of those factors sort of played into it. And I think for those reasons, I probably looked at the Saturday game as maybe more of an indicator of how I felt Norwich had progressed over the week. And, you know, I think obviously we'll come on to that. They sort of showed a lot sort of better level, I suppose, on Saturday, and maybe, you know, lots more positive shoots to take on to these next three games.
Yeah, and then Paddy, if we move on to that Liège game, and then we'll probably speak in more general terms and delve into individuals and do a bit of transfer stuff towards the end. But that Liège game was affected, and I think that's fair to say. Both Johannes Hoftorup and Kenny McLean said this, both affected by that game was really affected by what was extreme temperatures. I mean, when the players came out, it was 33 degrees. I mean, we were sweating in the stands. It wasn't a good afternoon to be running around chasing a football, I would suggest. So it's hard to ignore that factor first and foremost. But as a contest, it felt much more competitive, didn't it, in that Bruges contest. And I think probably a few frustrations from the Norwich boss, but mainly centred around their progression of the ball. He didn't feel that they did that quick enough, particularly in the first half, that would have created more opportunities. And then probably that they didn't then use the opportunities that they did generate a little bit better. So probably that Saturday game was a lot more of what, well, it was more of a game that we can look at from our perspective and analyse with a little bit more substance, I think, than the Bruges one, because it felt a little bit more competitive, for the want of a better word. It felt like two sides that were pretty evenly matched against each other.
Well, on that last point, yeah, that's where I would come, mate. If you put the two together, Torup said after the Bruges game, this is the level, i.e. opponent, the way they play, this is the level we want to aspire to get to. And he's not talking about in the here and now, he's talking about, you know, over the entirety of his tenure here at Carr Road. Whereas I think Liège, it was pretty clear, that's probably where the level they are now. You know, it's very similar. And obviously, you know, not the fact that it was a 1-1 draw, but in terms of how that game played out, there was no real dominant spell, I didn't feel, for either side. They both had periods. Yeah, not helped by the heat, not helped by the mass substitutions as that second half elapsed as well. I thought Norwich started brightly. It's just a shame that, you know, it was only 4 or 5 minutes between Borja Sainz's opener and then pretty sloppy concession, albeit, you know, Torup wasn't happy that he felt it was a free kick that wasn't given in the build-up. But you've still got to deal with the situation as it unfolds from there. I think if they'd have stayed 1-0, I could have seen Norwich maybe going on and adding a second or third before the break, because it felt like they had the upper hand maybe across midfield areas. But that's by the by in terms of a game where the result is largely irrelevant. That point you made about his frustration, I mean, we asked him that directly, because in one of the drinks breaks early in that first half, having been quite animated at the front of his technical area, it was noticeable. I mean, we're obviously quite a considerable distance, but you can see by a person's body language, you know, he was the focal point. He had all the players surrounding him in a circle, and there was a lot of hand signals and gestures. And when we asked him about that after the game, he said that point, he was a little bit frustrated that the speed of their play. And I think if I look from Northampton through to now, that's probably where he feels they need to develop that facet, because that's an intrinsic part of what he built at Nordsjælland, that speed of thought, speed of action, quality on the ball, rather than maybe a bit more of a lateral side to side that, you know, dare one say that was kind of quantified a David Wagner build-up, certainly in settled phases of deep possession and how they progress the ball. And of course, it is largely the same squad of players. So that getting to know you phase, we're still working through that, because quite clearly Torup is of a mind that while there's similarities in terms of the deep structure, in terms of the possession thereafter, he wants that ball shifted a lot quicker. He wants positionally players to be in certain areas of the field. And you can see that isn't quite there yet. And he could see that. And I think he referenced it again after Liège. But what I would say is, though, you know, the goal they scored was an example of that. It was Adam Eder on the half turn, profiting from a little bit of indecision in the Liège defence, and straight away Borja Sainz in a more advanced position. He fed the ball through, and it's very clever how Sainz, you know, sat down the fullback and opened up the angle and slotted it. So that is in there. I think we've seen with these players, certainly in the attacking areas of the field, that could be there. Top end of the pitch, not concerned. Middle three, and this might, as we talked about Liège, we might now go down the Kenny McLean post-match route. But I'm not quite sure where his head might be at with the middle three. You know, we've seen Zara, we've seen Callum Fisher, now we've seen Kenny McLean, Marcelino Nunez, we saw Liam Gibbs in the second half on Saturday. That, because I think defensively, whether it's left-hand side, they don't really have too many options, or in the middle of the defence, you've got Cordoba, and you would feasibly think he'll come in and maybe Hanley or Duffy with Brad Hills, maybe pushing them underneath. But that, I can see that taking shape. Not so sure for me which personnel he's settling on in that middle three. And that is such a key area of getting the ball from the back to the front, because I think if you can get the ball through those areas of the pitch, either Science, Rowe, Kamara, that's going to do some damage, whatever way he perms those players. So, yeah, I think of the two games, Liège was more the level they're at now. Bruges is where they aspire to be. And, you know, that is a hell of an aspiration, because they are one of the better sides in Europe, and certainly domestically would seem to be one of the, if not the strongest side in Belgium. So, yeah, I think, again, for me, it's moving it forward now. Magdeburg Friday. Do I leave that game feeling, I can see in the middle of that middle third of the pitch, those middle three midfielders, I can see things starting to emerge now, and almost a pattern of play, because I think if he can settle on that, it almost knits the back to the front areas of what his strategy is all about.
Yeah, and I think what we've learned, particularly over this trip, we saw a little bit at Northampton as well, we are beginning to see a real clarity now in terms of the way that they want to play. You can, and people will see it if you haven't watched Johannes Hofter up Norwich side yet, you'll see it pretty clearly. The left back tucks in, they create a back three in possession. Jack Stacey pushes really high. You then have the right winger, who in Saturday's instance was John Rowe, tucking in. They create almost like a box midfield. And then the width from the left is provided from a left wing. You've got almost like an asymmetrical type of shape. That's all very, very clear. And like you say, that then means that you have to move quickly. So there is a little bit of the lateral side-to-side stuff, but that's all about trying to displace and create space for attacking players. So when that space is there and there is a chance to progress the ball, then you have to play quickly. Because if you can play quickly whilst your opponent, I guess, is in that state of flux, their structure is a little bit disorganized, that is when you do feed off the creativity and you get chances. And that's why I think he wants them to play quicker. And you're right, I think there is probably an element of it, and it will probably bleed into the season, I suspect, where there are moments where they could have played with limited touches or fewer touches than they did, or there was an opportunity to play a forward pass. They didn't quite do it. And whether that's an intuition thing and that's just them almost reprogramming and rewiring themselves towards his demands and what he wants, and that obviously takes time. It's needs to become almost like muscle memory for them, doesn't it? And it's obviously not going to be there after 3 weeks. And whether that's just a case of more coaching, I thought Borja Sainz did probably not as well as a job as keeping the width on the left side. And then the shape becomes very narrow. And they were all just very small details. But you will see, and Norwich fans will see, maybe even at Carrow Road on Friday, a real clear structure when they build up. And I think that's pleasing to see. That's a real positive. They haven't done too much in terms of out of possession. I think we saw on Saturday a little bit more in terms of that, didn't we? It was a 4-3-3. They were really compact. It was all about narrowing the centre of the pitch and probably affording the wide areas to their opponents a little bit more. So we are beginning to see things, but the second half of pre-season, you know, these things get kind of mismatched by substitutions, and obviously the intensity of friendly games probably lowers as games go on. So hopefully in the second half of preseason, we see a little bit more of that. But I'm going to sort of roll on to your midfield point, because maybe we can bring Kenny McLean into this conversation. We'll talk specifically about transfers in a moment. But Adam, we had a bit of a long wait on Saturday for Kenny to emerge for his post-match, and he was catching up with a few people, and it's fine. But I think, you know, we were probably a bit surprised that it was him, because when you do what we do, you often know that realistically at the moment, we'd love to, but we're probably not going to be able to speak to any of those players that are being linked with moves away, particularly if they're relatively active. So when Kenny McLean comes out, I think there is a sort of, oh, right, OK, that's a little bit of a surprise, but a welcome one. And Kenny's always a good talker. I spoke to him plenty last season, so I know that. He was, you know, very clear in what he wants, wasn't he? In terms of all of this speculation, I mean, he basically signed for Rangers at one point. If you listen to the stuff north of the border at one stage, there's obviously been reports of Sheffield United. it was very interesting that he came out and wanted to shut all of that down, because players often don't speak with that certainty that he did on Saturday. And I guess that feeds into Paddy's point about the midfield mix, doesn't it? Because it is such an interesting part of the pitch for Norwich City. I think you're on mute, mate. There we go. There's always one.
A bit rusty, I suppose, after the week in Belgium. Yeah. I think you look at kind of that sort of authority, the way he spoke about kind of wanting to be here and his commitment to the club and the club's commitment to him previously. And, you know, sort of, I think that was the line about wanting to be here. You know, that's doesn't exactly smack of a man that's, you know, looking for a move personally. You know, whether there's kind of, you know, cogs within the football club that would sort of want to see a change in that position. But you look at kind of his influence last season and what he'd done, you know, he won player of the season. I think due to kind of his performance levels being pretty consistent throughout and that leadership, you know, a player who's been and seen it all really, you know, two championship promotions and title wins on his CV at Norwich City. You know, he's sort of someone that I think, you know, a lot of younger players could probably lean on, you know, as someone who's sort of played at the top of the game. He's played in the Premier League. He's played for Scotland in, you know, European competitions. You know, he's obviously played in the Championship as well. That kind of that experience that you see in the Championship, you know, it's the way to get out of this division. You know, no side has ever really kind of, you know, been built completely purely on youth. There's always got to be that blend. And I think, you know, Kenny McLean fits the bill, I think, for a lot of Norwich fans as a player, you know, in terms of that sort of experience and someone who's probably still able to influence it. But, you know, you look at kind of the energy levels that Torup, you know, wants to sort of see in this side and maybe that sort of the players that I suppose are alongside him in that midfield. I think, you know, they've probably got that sort of energetic nature a little bit more, the likes of Nunez and Sarah, obviously Liam Gibbs, I think, is someone that we want to see probably try and push his claim a bit more this year after a, you know, disappointing kind of, I suppose, well, definitely the last 12 months, but probably even the last 18 months, really, you know, comparatively to his performances sort of under Dean Smith at the start of the last Championship campaign. And I think that's probably, you know, there where the debate lies. You know, do you want to try and give the likes of Liam Gibbs more of an opportunity, or do you kind of go down the route of Kenny McLean? And it's going to be an interesting summer. I still think these rumours will rumble on, despite, you know, what Kenny's come out and said. I suppose it's up to, you know, those in managerial positions now and the coaches as to what they want to see from that midfield. And I think certainly sort of in the latter stages now of pre-season and certainly moving on towards Oxford, it will probably come a little bit more clear as to what role Kenny McLean might play this season, whether that is as someone in the starting 11 or someone who, you know, might be in amongst the substitutes or much, you know, maybe someone that they see as someone they want to try and move on, maybe try and get a little bit of value for. Obviously a player they pretty much signed for nothing. I know there was sort of the compensation fee to get him in early, but, you know, there's potential, I suppose, to make a little bit of money. But then, you know, you contrast that, is that money worth it if you, you know, lose a player who's, you know, been through it all and could be a positive influence on this group?
Yeah, and it's going to be very hard, I think, on the contract that he's on. Obviously that was renewed last summer after what was heavy interest from Leeds, supposedly Rangers as well at that point. I think it's going to be very difficult. He's got, what, 2 years left in an option. At 32, it's going to be difficult, I think, for him to possibly find someone willing to match/better what he's got at Carrow Road at the moment. And that is the reality for a host of Norwich players at this moment in time. We're going to come back in a second and speak about the winners or those who, as Paddy said earlier, are putting their hands up, maybe from the youth ranks, are making an impression. We'll do a bit of transfer talk as well. But now a quick word from our sponsors.
Got a scuff, paintwork scratch, dent or alloy damage? Want it fixed like new? Course you do. It's quick and easy to inquire. Just go to chipsaway.co.uk and enter a few details to get your free no-obligation estimate. One of our nationwide specialists will come to you, or you can go to one of our conveniently located car care centres, and Chips Away will professionally repair the damage, as well as offering a lifetime guarantee. Chips Away, like it never happened.
Yes, you're listening to the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast. Bit of a debrief from the Belgian tour, two games and quite a lot of stuff to chat about. We've already done that in the first half of the show. We're going to have a little section now talking about some of those players, the young players specifically, who have impressed so far in pre-season. There's been plenty to look at because Norwich City have carried quite a bloated squad over to Belgium. We're expecting that to be really trimmed down, actually, as the second half of pre-season begins on Friday night at Carrow Road against Magdeburg, before obviously then a trip to Austria before the concluding game against St. Pauli at Carrow Road a week on Saturday. Paddy, let's talk about some of those young players. I think it's hard not to look at two names specifically when we're discussing these. One of them was around the first team last season. So let's begin with the one that wasn't. Brad Hills. I mean, he's been really impressive this preseason, hasn't he? Off the back of what was a really impressive loan move at Accrington. I think we had a debate about him before. I'm not sure whether it was on here or whether it was just a conversation that we had. You lose track of what you've spoken about on things that are recorded and things that aren't. But there's been a lot of kind of looking at Abu Kamara, who had a very good loan at Portsmouth last season. And I think we're probably yet to see him really spark. And what I would say about him actually is, if you look at that loan at Portsmouth, it took him until about October time before he really got going. And there was, you know, a moment where John Messina had to really defend him and his capabilities. And from there, he really kicked on. So maybe that's a little bit of a slow burner. But with Brad Hill specifically, who's playing League Two football, there's always a question mark over whether there can be a jump made. And we don't know the answer to that yet. It's far too early. But, you know, I went to watch him, Accrington played Sutton in March, I think it was. And I went to watch him and you could see there physically in terms of his defensive attributes, there was a very capable young defender there, still only 20. And after the game, he spoke about the real opportunity that he felt he had coming back into the summer, being in a good place. Obviously, a Norfolk boy, a Norwich fan. It's his dream to play for Norwich City. He's made quite the start so far this pre-season, hasn't he?
Yeah, and the point about, and you can debate, you know, does it make a huge difference if it's one of your own? But I think culturally now what they're trying to do and reconnect the pipeline from the academy, I think it makes a huge amount of difference. He could be the poster boy now in the first phase of Napa and Torup, wanting to bring through young players that they've developed. What better example than, as you say, a Norfolk Norwich fan from a Norwich supporting family who makes it all the way through to actually, if not in the first period of his what's to come, as a regular starter, but certainly in and around Norwich's matchday squad and pushing the ones who are ahead of him in the queue. Cordoba, maybe Hanley, maybe Duffy when he's fit again. Yeah, he can't do too much more, really. And I think it's quite telling that you saw Saturday, you know, while there were mass changes, he got four more minutes than Warner. I don't think Tomkinson featured at all. These are all little clues and probably best not to overinterpret, because Torup clearly is still of a mindset to balance off minutes for every member of his squad, young or old. But that's all well and good. But it's not Hills who sat on the bench. It's Tomkinson. It's not Hills who isn't coming on in these other previous two games. You know, it's not Hills who went and did what he did at Accrington at a lower level in a very physically demanding environment. But the question marks about on the ball, is he good enough on the ball? Is he comfortable on the ball? Well, so far, while it is pre-season, but, you know, still Bruges, we've already talked about, good level of opponent. Liège, good technically as well, as you'd expect. We'll see a bit more of that. Magdeburg and Hoffenheim next week in Austria. He doesn't look uncomfortable for me on the ball. And what I like as well is there was a moment, second half in Liège, towards the end, Liam Gibbs, understandably a little bit rusty, a little bit sluggish, lost the ball in his own half of the pitch. And Liège are countering. Hills has got back and halted that counter at source. And you thought, well, that's actually good pace there as well, which you might not associate when you actually look at him and you see what he is, really imposing physical specimen, but quick over the ground, certainly in those initial 5 to 10 yards. And so far, when he's been asked to get on the ball and try and, as you mapped out earlier, you know, the system and how they shuffle along, that doesn't look to have fazed him. So let's not over-exaggerate the impact he's had in the summer, but at this stage, if he continues on this path between now and Oxford, I really don't see a scenario where they let him out of the building again. Whether that means he's close enough to be really in the conversation to start at Oxford, probably not. But he's certainly, I think, if he continues on this path, will be a person that Torup wants to keep in and around the squad. And then, of course, you don't know. Opportunities can present themselves between now and January. Injuries, whatever, suspensions. If it doesn't quite happen for him in these first 6 months, then maybe you see a path where he goes out on loan again. But in the here and now, yeah, he clearly looks like one who is a lot closer to that matchday squad, matchday 11, than Tomkinson or Warner is for me in that very defined central defensive scrap that's got ongoing. Adeboyega you could throw in as well, but I thought it's interesting that Torup's had a look at him in wide fullback areas. Maybe they see him more in that area in terms of in the here and now. But in terms of centre-backs, there's no doubt of the young crop, it's Hills who's leading the charge.
Yes, I agree. I think he's been the one of, you know, and there's a real young cohort of centre-backs there, really, really talented, a lot of them. Jonathan Tomkinson had a good loan in League Two last season. You've mentioned Adeboyega, Jaden Warner as well, who made his senior debut last year, then went to Notts County, didn't have the best loan, but there's been some good moments from him in pre-season as well. And I think it is important, and you mapped it out there, not to over-egg, not to over-exaggerate, not to suggest that it would be some travesty if he doesn't start at Oxford. But you can only measure what he's done so far. And that was, you know, his objective when he stepped in, I'm sure, on the first day of pre-season testing, was to make sure that he had given himself a chance. Well, he's given himself a chance halfway through pre-season with his performances. And, you know, he's played on the right, he's played on the left. And there is also some context to throw in. Shane Duffy, obviously, he's not played the last two friendly games for Norwich, slight fitness issue. And obviously, there's some personal issues there with him as well. Grant Hanley's just come back and played his first minutes. And there is inevitably going to be a rustiness there. Jose Cordoba hasn't come back into the building, as we've mapped out. So Norwich's three senior centre-backs, if you want to talk it like that, haven't played much in this pre-season. So there probably has been a window there to step into, but fair play to him because he has stepped into it. And like you say, I think he is probably the one leading that charge. And this is where I think it becomes interesting for me more generally, Adam, because when we talk about wanting to go down the route of playing young players and implementing them, which is fine saying that, and it, you know, it's a noble ambition, but there becomes a reality where you have a situation like this potentially, and let's say, and let's map out a scenario, not saying this is going to happen, he could go and have three stinkers and we might be saying at the end of the preseason, actually there's a lad who started well and showed his potential but needs to go back out again. But let's say he does back up what he's done so far in the free, and he does make Torup's trim down squad, and there is really this push continues towards the start of the season. If there does become a window where Torup likes him and, you know, and whatnot, and there is almost this kind of tussle then, do you pick him over two senior centre-backs? Maybe that's less of the debate. But the point is that if Norwich do want to go down that route, at some point, those difficult conversations and even those difficult decisions to select younger players ahead of more senior players. And look, we could push this into midfield as well in the debate that we had. Say Liam Gibbs, if there's a willingness maybe to play Liam Gibbs over Kenny McLean, then that is going to be the interesting point, isn't it? To see just how much of this youth policy they really want to pursue and how hard, how quickly and how hard they want to pursue it in those two key areas, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, pre-season, younger players often come to the fore. You know, you look at last campaign, it was Kellen Fisher that was maybe catching the eye, and then, you know, comes around to the start of the campaign and, you know, David Wagner was maybe reluctant to play younger players, but you looked at Jack Stacey, the experienced championship operator, aggressive, and maybe Callum Fisher looked a little bit raw and maybe didn't quite manage to progress his claims to make a start. But, you know, certainly from, you know, pre-season onwards, he obviously got himself in and around the group, and it's then about a coach that's, you know, able to throw them on and is willing to do so. And you feel like under Torup and under Ben Napper, as sort of a double act, there is going to be that willingness to try and give these younger players a chance. And, you know, you go back to Stuart Webber, Daniel Farke, Max Aaron sort of maybe made a bit of a claim through the Carabao Cup. I mean, Norwich, ironically, have got Stevenage. You know, I think it's the second game of the season. If Brad Hills gets a start in that game and then, you know, impresses again, then maybe the, you know, opportunities might open up for him further on. You know, I think particularly if Norwich can then go and progress in that cup, you know, it is about just trying to get these players senior minutes in competitive games, because as good as pre-season is, these games aren't competitive. And, you know, there is obviously all the elements around it in trying to sort of embed systems, and a lot of players get more opportunities maybe during pre-season because, you know, there's nothing on the line. But when it comes to those games, you know, the 3 points and what it matters, you know, in terms of Norwich City and what their season might become, it is about sort of trusting these younger players. And I just hope maybe now that under Torup, you know, the likes of Hills, the likes of Fisher, the likes of Gibbs will hopefully between now and January, if that's the case, and then maybe if they haven't got the minutes they want, they do go out on loan, that they do get that opportunity. And, you know, then you might get another breakthrough star, the likes of Max Aarons, the likes of Todd Cantwell, the likes of Ben Godfrey. We could go on with, you know, but that era was sort of built on younger players being given an opportunity, progressing their claims, and then, you know, establishing themselves as, you know, forefront players and, you know, key players in terms of the starting 11. And I just hope, you know, and feel under this head coach that maybe, you know, something similar could happen. Maybe not necessarily in the short term, but certainly moving forwards.
Yeah, and I think what this period has done as well is probably exposed those who aren't quite ready to take that step, that maybe some of them that we thought possibly would be, you know, and everyone will perhaps have their own views on who that is and who that isn't. I think it's worth at this moment a mention of Guilherme Montoya, who amongst all of the the obviously attention that the left back position as well has got, has done quite well, I think, in the opportunities that he's been given. Norwich are still looking to pursue two. I think that's probably right to try and get him out on loan after what was the first year in under-21s football last season. And we're probably expecting at least one of those to be a loan, as we'll come on to later, then that gets him in a position where he's been exposed to a full season of football to then come back next summer to have a go. That feels a little bit more realistic to me than this summer, but I think he has done well in the opportunities that he's been given. And then very, very quickly, Paddy, Callum Fisher is the other one, and Adam mentioned him there. And I think what's been interesting about Fisher, and I think we've seen this with a few other examples, Borja Sainz, etc. Abu Kamara, we've seen playing a multitude of positions. He doesn't seem a coach that is, particularly wedded to, right, Callum Fisher has always been a right back, therefore I'm just going to play him at right back elsewhere. There's a player there that he wants to see and almost try and find a slot for him that he thinks will benefit the team and Callum Fisher more widely, not just one that, he's been placed in a box as a right back, so he's going to play there. And he's done really well, hasn't he, in those midfield appearances that we've seen so far.
Yes, and then Saturday played him at left back. We obviously associate him, and Adam touched on it there, as a right back option. That's what he more or less was under Wagner in his first senior season at Norwich. Just wanted to have a quick look at those quotes, because I asked him specifically about Fisher and what he's seen, and clearly likes what he sees after the game Saturday. And it goes back to the point he made about maybe his frustrations looking at the team in that first half against Liège, not progressing the ball quick enough. In answer to Callum Fisher, he talks about he likes him because he thinks he can, and his phrase was accelerate their game. He can, in the right areas of the pitch, comfortable taking the ball in, pressure around him, doesn't faze him, but yet he can process that and get Norwich moving forward, not just laterally or back. So if that's the case, you have a very versatile young player there who he trusts, it would feel, with each passing game, either in those midfield pockets or maybe left-hand side. And obviously, as you mapped it out rightly, Connor, tucking in and having that discipline there in terms of the build-up shape. So, yeah, much like Hills, he is the other standout young player, and he is still a young player, different in that he didn't go out on loan last season. He was in and around the group, got his minutes, albeit not anywhere near Stacey, because he was the undisputed number one at right back. But he's looking like a player who could have a bigger say this time round. And it flows into the situation with the left backs. If they get to Oxford and plates haven't quite been spun to the degree that they've been able to get those deals over the line, then, I think he would probably trust Fisher to do a job in those early games on the left-hand side of the defence if he had to go that route. Not what they'd want to do by any stretch, but he clearly rates him, he likes him, and again, as we've talked liberally on this podcast, there's some players you can see, a Torup type players in the system he wants, drawing on the evidence of what he did in 18 months as Nordsjælland coach. There's other players, young and old, not quite so, and it looks like there has to be a bit of a convergence between said players and the Danish coach for them to be accommodated under what he's trying to do. I don't see that process being required with Fisher. I think he already looks like he can take on board the instructions and the demands that Thorup would place on players in those areas of the pitch, left-hand side of the defence, anywhere across the middle three in midfield. And again, at this stage of pre-season, I haven't sat down and worked it out, but it feels like maybe we're not even at the halfway stage. But if not, we're approaching that. So there's still a whole body of work that he needs to continue on the path he's on. And if he does that, and maybe it does flow out of the situation with bringing in new left-back options, left-sided defensive options, then he certainly has to be in the equation for Oxford if he continues on the path he's on now, much like Hills.
Yes, and it is halfway. Yeah, three games played, three to play. Obviously, two of those coming at Carrow Road as well. Let's move on then and talk about the left back search. Now, I'm probably going to bounce this back to you, Paddy, but we know where Callum Doyle is at the moment. He's in the US with Manchester City on a training camp, and we've mapped out all of that, I think, pretty repetitively. But there is obviously a situation at Manchester City where, because of the European Championships and other competitions elsewhere, that they have a host of players who aren't currently with them, and we could sit here and listen, Carl Walker, John Stones, Nathan Ake, Akanji, Guardiola. We could list them, but loads of defenders who are away at this moment in time. Therefore, they have had to take what is, and they confirmed their squad, a pretty young squad, to America. The hope is, and I think it's hope from Norwich's side and probably from Manchester City's as well, that a loan deal upon the conclusion of that tour, which I think is in the first, in the week that Norwich City begin their season, it officially concludes, that there will be hopefully an ability then to send Callum Doyle out on loan, hopefully to Norwich. But of course, there is a window where if someone comes and puts some money on the table, the situation could change because nothing has been signed, sealed or done yet. Until that is the case, then there is always an opportunity, of course, that someone can come in and trump them. So we know that situation. We also know that Norwich City probably would like to this summer. And because of where the Callum Doyle situation is, they are going to need another left back. So what can you tell us about the other search? They've been linked so far with two Portuguese players, Francisco Moura and Leonardo Lello as well. It does seem like Portugal is an active ground. Where do you think we are in terms of the left back search for Norwich City?
It is an active ground, absolutely. They like both of those players. They like Moura, but I mean, there was a few reports last midweek, actually, when I was in Belgium, kind of back and forth around figures in the 5 to 7 million euro. Well, Norwich aren't going to be trading anywhere near that for any player, let alone sort of unproven, relatively, left-backs from Portugal. So I don't necessarily feel that's one that's probably going to be pursued in this window, albeit, yes, they are in very real order, focusing in on that Portuguese market. There was Van der Laan as well, who, a Brazilian player, but clearly the Portuguese background. We've talked about Montoya. Well, he was sourced from Benfica, their youth setup, 12 months or so ago, whenever it was. So, you know, there was a network in place, and it looks like Ben Knapper has continued that and maybe added to it as well in terms of a focus. And it's interesting, why Portugal? You know, is there something in terms of that level of football, the demands that it places on left-sided defenders that fits Torup's system? It's quite an intriguing one, that it does seem like a succession of Portuguese-based or Portuguese origin, in Van der Linde's case, options. So nothing on Moura, I don't think, in this window, unless there was, you know, there was some, and the immediate one that would spring to mind is some sort of loan option with a clause, maybe, that could bridge. But Norwich aren't going to be spending those sums, certainly not. And even if they did manage to sell some of their high-end assets, I still don't see in this window them going back into the market and paying that amount of money for any player. So, you know, I thought it was intriguing. Ben Knapper wasn't at the Liège game. He was at the Bruges game. Does that mean, you know, that there is progress in one or two of these targets? Time will tell. But there is an urgency to it now. You know, the fact that, I don't know exactly how many days, but the clock is ticking to Oxford. And as it stands, Doyle isn't going to be in the building at best, maybe before the start of the week leading into Oxford. That said, there is a caveat. I've seen it this morning. You mentioned him, Guavidal, who is Man City's established left-back option. He is actually going to join up for the second tour game. I think they play Celtic midweek here, Wednesday, out in America. North Carolina, I think they are. I'm going to say AC Milan. I might have that wrong, but whoever they play, they're playing on the 27th. He will be available for that game. Hypothetical, I know, but is a scenario where he could be released slightly earlier, because it's not in Norwich's interest, really, to sit on their hands and wait for Callum Doyle until that week leading into, so post-San Paoli and the final Carrow Road friendly, but prior to Oxford. But I mean, he was a bit tongue-in-cheek, Torup, after the game on Saturday. He said he didn't expect anything, but who knows when the plane landed a few hours later, if that was going to change. Well, it didn't change. And I don't think there's anything imminent at the minute. But, I mean, there was a confidence at the start of the week in Belgium that last week they could have got somebody in. So that they were obviously down the track. That might have been Doyle, because obviously at that point he hadn't been confirmed on the tour in America. But that had now been the case. He's out there. We've seen training pictures of him out there. So, a bit of a holding pattern again. And it wouldn't surprise me if that Portuguese market is the one they're looking at, because, you know, the volume of links this summer, it feels like a little bit like with Cordoba. You know, they're just trying to be a little bit more astute, a little bit more clever. I'm not saying Portugal isn't as high a visible a market as some of the other ones in Europe, but it certainly isn't, you would say, on a par with French or German or the Dutch leagues or Holland or Belgium, for example. So, you know, there is parallels with the Cordoba search to a degree, looking in Portugal, and certainly not the established clubs in Portugal, which I don't think, you know, the clubs that those players represent are necessarily the front rank. So we'll see. But as we record here on Monday afternoon, I don't think there's any sense that that search is going to end this side of Magdeburg. So we'll see. Things can change. But, you know, Doyle, yes, with the caveats you've already mentioned, I think there is a fear that another Premier League club might look at him playing out there in America and think, you know, off the back of what he did at Leicester and Coventry, that he's worth, young English homegrown player, he's worth putting money down and testing Man City's resolve. And then there may be a deal to be done there. That would obviously blow out of the water Norwich's attempts to bring him in on loan. And as a result, I think there'll have to be a degree of scenario planning even around that, even though there's a sense of confidence inside the club that they position themselves at the head of one or two other championship suitors for that player. But if it's not signed and sealed, then anything can happen. We've seen that plenty of times across the transfer market more generally. So if you're Ben Napa, you may be shifting a little bit uneasily at this stage, because there's no doubt they'd have liked this done by now, at least one of those left-backs in the building. That isn't the case. But I'll go back to what Torup said on this matter. You know, I've asked him two or three times after these games.
He's enjoying asking him as well.
Yeah, well, that's good. Yeah. Define close or define reaching a conclusion. That's a different byproduct. If you haven't seen the video after the Liège game, go and have a watch of that and you'll know what I'm talking about. But he said in regards of left-back especially, yes, that's a priority. But he doesn't want any left back. He wants the right left back. And if he has to, he will wait for that person, because it's important in the system that he wants that left hand side, the player they target, is very comfortable in a Torup style system. And as a result, while there is an urgency with each passing week of pre-season and it's unresolved, I think he would still go long. Would be my personal opinion. Everything he's saying suggests if they have to wait for Doyle, as an example, they will. And if they have to wait maybe for another, they will as well. But how long do you wait? And how long do you almost... It's almost brinkmanship now. It's how long do you wait before you decide, no, we can't rely on having... Even though they've done a lot of groundwork in the Doyle deal, especially. But if it gets to a point where you're still not 100% sure, then you need to go again. And that's why, you know, and it is an insurance policy, Kellen Fisher playing there, potentially, you know, could, I don't know, tongue in cheek, Kenny McLean, Jacob Sorensen, these type of players. Oh, I'm only saying as a stopgap at the start of the season, if they had to go that route, would it be ideal? No, clearly not. But they may feel that there are elements in that squad now who could, at a push, do a job if it afforded them extra time to get the players that they want towards the back end of this transfer window. Because as always, you know, there'll be four or five league games, cup games played before the window actually closes. August the 30th is the deadline. And particularly with the loan element of that, you know, you're in the hands of the parent club, as has been proven with Man City and Guardiola and wanting Doyle out there this week.
Indeed, I think Callum Doyle is worth waiting for, if I'm honest. And I think he is one. And like you say, they're going to need two. So I think you can probably go and work on the other. But you look at how he played at Leicester last year under Maresca. It was in a very similar role. So I think with him, if he did come in, there probably would be less information building that would have to be done than if you signed someone completely external who hadn't had any sort of familiarity of doing that as well. It's just, as you say, it's the distance between where we are at the moment and him officially holding up a Norwich scarf or shirt or whatever, isn't it? It's that void in between that anything can happen and anyone can kind of jump on it and slap some money down on the table. But I think he is worth going long for, because I think it'd be a tremendous addition for Norwich, particularly in the system that they want to play. Adam, just finally then, it's obviously a Carrow Road return this week. It's quite rare, actually, in pre-season of recent years that we get one Carrow Road game, let alone we get two German clubs coming in what, a week and a bit with a trip to Austria sandwiched in between. We're going to be out there as well, thanks to Chips Away and to you guys as well. What do we need to see now from Norwich City in the second half of pre-season? Is it just more building in terms of what they've done, or do you think we need to see now, as Paddy said, some real solutions to certain issues? I think there's still some debate about wide areas as well, and probably forward areas with Adam Eder. We haven't even had a chance to speak about him in this podcast. But is that what you want to see now? A bit more of a solid base of players and base of solutions towards that championship opener against Oxford?
Yeah, I think it's working towards sort of having a settled side that's going to be the one that will face Oxford on the opening day. Of course, that might shift a little bit, you know, in terms of Norwich doing any inwards business or outwards business between now and the 10th of August. But, you know, I think it is now about building on the work they've done, trying to get the players that will be involved this season, you know, and bring them to the forefront, and we kind of get to see them and maybe try and gel them as a unit more than kind of this sort of chopping and changing we've had in these early games, just trying to get players minutes and obviously give Torrup time to assess them. That time for sort of assessment for me now is sort of dwindling. It's now about, you know, it is about trying to bring in a settled side, trying to work on the little sort of parts of the game that he wants to see improvements in, that work out of possession, and sort of just still trying to build off sort of what he's trying to implement, because, you know, it's still in sort of the early days of that, and a lot of these players still will need to get the messaging from him about what he wants from them, the demands he's going to place on them, certainly when it comes to that opening day, and, you know, sort of the pre-season elements out of the way. And it is about kind of a competitive nature of a game, and, you know, you can't really afford these mistakes or these slip-ups. It is about now being, you know, totally sort of comfortable in the environment and what they're sort of, you know, the demands that are being placed on them. So, yeah, I think those for me are the key parts. It's about the players being interested. You know, with Adam Eder, is that speculation going to affect him still? Is, you know, he fully on board? It's just about trying to establish where maybe the mindset of some of these players is at as well. You know, Kenny McLean was quite vocal about his sort of situation and wanting to be here. Would it be good, you know, if Adam Eder could maybe stress that to Torup or Abu Kamara? There's still lots of noises around him, you know, just trying to get the settled sort of side, I suppose. You don't really want that disruption of individuals maybe not being fully on board by the time you get to the opening day. So, yeah, I think it's those, and then maybe transfer business for me. I know that's sort of away from preseason slightly, but it is just about trying to bring a couple more bodies through the door. So, you know, Torup's maybe got individuals in certain positions that, you know, he's fully comfortable with that, you know, suit what he's trying to do. And, you know, Norwich can then hopefully sort of have the best season and best starts of the campaign that they possibly can.
Good stuff. Thank you, gents. Plenty of ground covered there. Plenty of ground that we have to cover again on a different pod. As I said, we haven't even spoken about so many points, the players that weren't on tour, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm sure we'll have that all covered, and all of the elements that we haven't covered, you can go and ask Paddy about on a Q&A, or we'll be back with another pod probably after the Magdeburg game pre-Austria, and then we'll do another one in Austria as well. So we'll begin as the pre-season ramp up to ramp up the podcasts as well. But that one does bring this to a close. Gents, thank you very much. Thank you all very much for watching and listening. Let us know your thoughts on how you're feeling about Norwich City 3 games into the pre-season, and we'll see you again very soon.
Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of Coda's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use Coda Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on Coda. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.